I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about animal companions. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. The hot weather dog trick not to try. How bad will tick season be? Flea and tick prevention, the new cat app for your phone, supplying fun and games. Producer Lori Mack and I are here in the New Haven studio with Dr. Todd Friedland of Mansfield, Connecticut. He's a longtime contributor to our show as a vet. Welcome back, Todd.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's get back to this app for cats. Now, this is an app that's on the phone you told us about. And what do these do? Let's start with this first one, cat toy.
Well, these are all, there's several of them, and they're all very similar. They are designed, I don't know if they work, they're designed to entertain your cat. Not so much while you're away, but I guess it could if you didn't mind running your phone battery down. But they, the one that we're talking about, the one that I was I actually just broke out laughing about was, I think it's, I don't remember the name of that. What was the one?
It's the human to cat translator.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that one is
that's not even a game.
Yeah, that's not a game. This is the human to cat translator, and this one you allow your cat to meow into the phone, and then the phone translates that and then tells you what your cat was saying.
See, that's a brilliant business
idea. It is,
but in
the website it says that there's a disclaimer that says it's not really what your cat's saying. It's just cute things that cats might say to you.
But I think it also lets you speak to the cat.
And then translates it
to the
cat.
And then it translates it in yowls and howls.
Yeah.
So that you can truly communicate.
So you can really communicate with your cat.
And the disclaimer on that one is that the translation may not be accurate.
So, you know, this is fun and games you can have. That one I don't think would disturb your cat in any way.
So the cat toy gives you the choice of a small spider on the screen or a fluttering butterfly and this moving laser dot?
Yeah, that's just another, you know,
now, isn't that laser is a little bit controversial?
It is very controversial, and I saw that in that web, you know, when I sent you that website, and I saw that. The issue with this is that there are pet psychologists that believe that every time, well, when you play with your pet, dog or cat or otherwise, that the pet should win every once in a while, which means that let's take the dog pulling on a sock, which I don't recommend, but everybody does it. That the dog should get the sock every once in a while. The dog should win.
That's your classic example of tug of war.
The tug of war. That's right.
So
Why is that? So that you don't, I mean, I'm not the behaviorist here, but so that you don't discourage the dog from trying to do different things and to hunt or to do anything. Because it's all about hunting and, you know, gathering and providing food and owning and all of that. So you don't want to discourage the dog to where the dog doesn't try to catch mice or whatever.
And that's why the laser's controversial?
Well, the laser, because the cats can't win.
Neither can the dogs.
And the dogs can't win. They can't win because they can't pick it up. They can't touch it. They can't get it. And people tend to be humored by this, so they make sure that the cat can't get it or the dog.
Well, the cats, I mean, I've used this laser with my friend's cats, and they look like they're having a ball. I mean, it's really getting them to exercise.
They do, and I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I'm just saying, you know, some of the behaviorists are saying that it's a bad thing.
Be careful. Okay. And, Lori, what was it? Oh, the jitterbug, right?
That's the jitterbug.
How does that work? That has no sound.
That has no sound. And there are different bugs that appear on the screen.
Right. And this is the one with the different levels.
Right.
So this is one where bugs come across the screen. The cat taps with its paw, I imagine, the bug. And if it gets a certain number of bugs, then the game goes to the next level and the bugs move faster and there might be more bugs. And when I sent this to you maybe a month ago, at that time, no cat had ever reached the top level.
I think it's level five. Yeah.
Yes. Faith, I don't know.
What does that mean?
I see these things in the newspapers. I'm attracted to any pet article, and I see these things, and if you want to know what Todd Friedland really says is that there's a lot of people out there with a lot of time on their hands who just to invent these things.
I
have outdoor cats. I don't play with them in that way, but I just wonder if you set your phone down with bugs, if a cat would even care.
Yeah, wow.
But that's these things exist, and I encourage people to try them, especially if you have an indoor cat that is a couch potato. You know?
Well, do these things work when you talk to animal behaviorists, the radio on or the TV on for the animal at home, whether
another
it's a cat controversial, or a dog?
Another controversial issue. When people come to me or to many veterinarians and say, you know, my pet is anxious when it's alone. Okay, there's all different degrees of that. If you really get into severe separation anxiety, we're in a studio that has carpeting in it, and there's a little cabinet with a phone and some other pictures on it, and there's another table with a lamp on it. We would come home at night, and the carpet would be up. There might be wallboard missing. The cabinet would be down, and these dogs are just frantic. They're just totally frantic. And then there's the dogs that just bark. And then the neighbor complains. So we say, okay, look, what are you doing at home with a dog when you leave? Nothing. Okay, leave the radio on and see if that works.
I actually do that.
Yeah, just leave the television on, see if that works. These are all things that we try. And, you know, anecdotally, sometimes that's all it takes.
Was Jack barking? Is that what
no,
you
No, I just... left it on
sweet company
NPR all day long.
Yeah, so that's the relief of guilt factor is what Lori's doing.
That's right.
Is just making Lori
it's
feel
all
better.
About me.
And we don't know if the dog's really listening to the Faith Middleton show right now or not.
Well, do you remember the woman who called in who had the Morgan Horse Farm in Connecticut? And she said that when the show came on, the horses would whinny in the barn because it was this familiar sound coming on every day. I was so excited by that. You couldn't have told me better thing.
There's science. That's a Pavlovian reflex. It's just there's science that talks about this. The question is, do they have, say, for those horses, is that a feeling of, oh, my gosh, I have to do that again performance? Or is it a sign of, oh, boy, I get to do that again.
Well, what?
And I don't know the
Todd,
answer.
Yeah.
I should know the answer. I'm sorry, listeners.
You want to be on the show?
I don't know.
In the future.
I don't know the answers.
Who we got? We've got Joanne on the line. Welcome to the show, Joanne. Thanks for calling 203-776-WNPR. Go ahead, Joanne.
Hi, Faye. Thanks very much. Dr. Freeman, I wanted to get your comments about the tax proposal, which just came out of the State Finance Committee last week, where they proposed to tax veterinary services for all animals. That would mean all medical services that people go and get for their pets would now be subject to the state sales tax of 6%. There are many of us who believe that this will only exacerbate the problem that many low-income families have, problems they already have paying for their pets' medical care. Plus, it will also affect many of the Good Samaritans who do a lot of animal rescue and rehabilitation. And I'd like to have your comments about this proposed sales tax.
Can I ask a question about the how does the animal rehabilitation get affected by this tax?
There are a number of organizations that are not 501c3. There are a number of individuals who take in animals and personally take on rehabilitation and medical care, and they would be subject to this 6% plus sales tax as well.
Thank you for your comment.
I was legislative chairman for the State Veterinary Association for 15 years back in the 80s and 90s, and this has come up. This is not the first time this has come up. You know, the state is just looking for things to tax. So, but the last time that that was approached, I'm not sure who's putting this bill forth, but the IRS came to our rescue, actually, and said veterinary services are equal to medical services and may not be taxed. So that was the end of it right there. So I don't know whether this is going to – whether the IRS rulings have changed, whether they haven't changed. But at that time, we were saved by the IRS. I'm not sure that we ever would have been taxed anyway. The issue – what my comments are is that it will – a couple things, but it will limit some people's ability to pay veterinary bills or rehabilitation bills. What's a rehabilitation bill? There are physical therapy areas, hospitals in Connecticut where you can take your dog for physical therapy, underwater treadmills and things like this.
Really?
So, yeah. So to tax them just adds to the cost. I think every veterinarian would be totally against it. The IRS, at least this is several years ago, that was, you know, just said, no, you can't tax veterinary medicine. So I'm not even sure that our legislators know, somebody's going to hate me for this, but knowing that our legislators are historically known for not checking into the background of these issues, I think that it'd be worthwhile for somebody to talk to these legislators and say, you know, you need to check with the feds first to make sure that you can even do this. Last time that happened, the feds said no.
So full disclosure, are you fully retired?
I am totally retired.
Okay, there we go. See, okay, I'm Faith
Middleton. I hope that helps your answer.
I'm Faith Middleton with Lori Mack, and we're with our regular contributor, Vet on the Air, Dr. Todd Friedland, and we're going to go through some of these things. This was something that I had looked up in old notes, and I saw that we had one summer talked about ice cubes in the water bowl in the summer because, you know, and I thought, oh, you must have recommended it. But in fact, it's not necessarily a great idea because what happens with dogs and ice?
Well, there are some dogs. I had one of my dogs who loved ice. You know, you go into the refrigerator, you pull out your ice cubes, and one falls on the floor.
And it's like a game.
This particular dog was like, it was just like on that thing like it was a mouse or a laser tag or whatever it is. Dogs that, and this is interesting, I'm going to bring in Lori's response to this when we were talking about before the show. Dogs will eat ice. Dogs will get brain freeze. And we think, we're pretty sure, they will get headaches. So if you have ice cubes floating around in a bowl, then I don't think if your dog licks the water, it's a problem. But if your dog eats all that ice, your dog can get what we call brain freeze, which is eating that whole ice cream cone too fast and getting a headache.
Why does that happen?
How do you know?
Well, okay, we've got two questions here. Why does it happen? It causes changes in the constriction of the blood vessels in your brain.
But how do you know?
Well, if you think about when you've had a headache, you might, and I do, find yourself pressing your head in your hand, and it temporarily relieves your headache. Dogs will walk up to the wall and press their if they eat a whole bunch of ice cubes, they often will walk up to the wall and press their head against the wall. They know that this, and we're thinking that this is relieving their headache, that it's a natural phenomenon, it's an instinctive phenomenon, and it helps them relieve their headache.
I see.
So ice water is probably fine, but ice cubes, one ice cube, flip it to the dog, it eats it, no problem.
Right.
But a bowl full of ice cubes, I think that's
not
an issue.
A good idea.
So we'll get into some more things to do as summer appears. Possibly.
Sure, we have
heat to deal with. We have
ticks and fleas to deal with.
We have everything to deal with. 203-776-WNPR. We have your questions too. We're going to take a short break, and then Lori Mack and I are back to talk with Dr. Todd Friedland about our animal companions and the best lives they can live. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much. I'm with Lori Mack on the show, and our guest is Dr. Todd Friedland. Okay, let's do, as promised, get to this summer prep for cats and dogs, Lori.
So I've noticed that there's a product on the market from at the vet's office, let's say, that actually has to do with preventing ticks on your property, and it's a spray.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any truth to this? Does it work? Is it toxic for people?
I live in Eastern Connecticut. One of my neighbors does this with a commercial sprayer. Guy comes with a big sprayer and sprays all his trees and everything else because he doesn't want any ticks on his cat. By the way, that cat happens to be my cat that moved to his house. We have another story to tell if you want. But that's actually our cat that moved to his house because it could go indoors and sleep on the dryer. That was nice and warm.
Okay, so this cat's not stupid.
So, but he still puts Frontline on the cat, and he still finds ticks on his cat. I'm in a very rural area, so the answer to your question is: if a lot of people in a concentrated area sprayed, they might impact the tick population. But if you're spraying one yard, you're thinking about all the mice, all the deer, all the birds. Personally, I think it would make a little bit of difference, if any.
Chipmunks,
and is a good
raccoons.
Marketing. It's a good marketing gag for.
Well,
that's
sure
kind
is.
Of how I feel.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the spraying is.
I think you should protect your pet, and pay attention to yourself.
Did you say that it was a dog, right? A dog? Oh no, cat.
Cat
had a frontline collar on.
No, it has a frontline. You know, they use monthly frontline.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They spray their property. They're spraying 1 acre in the middle of the woods. They're spraying 1 acre in the middle of the woods. The deer go through his yard every day, just like they go. He's only two houses away from me, so.
But wouldn't they be falling off the deer, the ticks, and then the ticks die?
If the stuff is there all the time, yes. But if it gets washed off, I think it's just such a small amount of. That I don't think it could do anything unless you're in a housing development where a lot of people do it.
So you mentioned Frontline. While we're on Frontline.
Okay.
Frontline is they are drops that you put
on. They call them monthly spot-ons.
Okay.
Right.
And you usually start – can we talk about the correct application of this?
Because, absolutely. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. So I have a friend. When I explained to her what my vet said to me about how to apply this stuff, she said, I never heard that before. So.
And what did they tell her?
Nothing. They just she bought the front line, put it on the dog. They have a pool. The dog would jump in the pool.
Right.
But supposedly you're not supposed to.
Well, here's the deal. Front line is different than all the others, but I'm going to kind of group them all together. These products, the spot on, we're talking about the monthly spot on. Number one, it has to go on skin. Number one, it has to go on skin. So you have to part the hair and get it on the skin.
Okay, that's good to know.
That's A, number one. Most of the failures where people will call us up and say, Frontline didn't work, I would say, before we do anything, come on in and put it on in front of me.
Good idea.
We didn't charge for that service, or one of my technicians, the nurses, or whatever. Come on in and show me what you're doing. And most of those people, it was human error. All you have to do with most things that go wrong in the world is take humans out of the picture. That's all you have to do. So we would teach them how to put it on. And there were some dogs with such thick hair that we would actually shave a little part over their neck just that would last a couple months. So A, number one, goes on skin. It can go on skin and hair, but not hair alone.
And is it also, do you start on the head and then work your way down to the neck?
Well, different products tell you to do it different ways. Frontline in particular is one spot.
Okay.
One spot. Whereas I think Advantix, remember people, I'm retired, so some of this stuff has kind of gone by the wayside with me. But the Advantix, I'm pretty sure for the extra large dogs, they tell you to put it on the neck and on the tail. But these have spreading properties, so you don't need to bathe your dog in this stuff. So the issue is that some of them say waterproof. Mm-hmm. Okay? And they're not waterproof. That's because they get washed off and replenished. That's the situation. So when you have a dog, rule number two, you should try not to bathe your dog or have your dog be wet 1 day ahead. 1 to 2 days ahead and 1 to 2 days after application. Why? Because the oils in the skin are what spread the product. So if your oils are being washed away in a bath or whatever, then the product is much less efficient, less efficient. That's how that all works.
Sharon, I'm sorry, Todd.
No,
go ahead.
Some of them replenish by staying in the hair follicles of the skin. Some of them replenish by being taken into the body internally and then coming back out through the skin like garlic would.
Sharon, Faith Middleton, Lori Mack, and our guest is Dr. Todd Friedland. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm so happy that I got through today because I'm getting ready to take my cat to the vet again tomorrow. Doctor, I have a problem with this 12-year-old female cat of mine. For the past 3 months, this will be the fifth time that I've taken her into the vet. He gave her a shot of antibiotics and prednisone the first time because he said she has gingivitis. We have been in, this will be the fifth visit tomorrow. The prednisone shot lasts a couple of weeks. It wears off. She stops eating, stops drinking, just lays around lethargic. She's sick. Now, how long am I going to be able to continue giving prednisone shots? And is this gingivitis? I said to him, why don't we clean her teeth? And he said, no, her teeth are not that bad looking. It's the gum. So I just wanted your input on this.
Okay, my input, I'm hoping that you're dealing with something in cats. Well, I'm not hoping, but you may be dealing with something in cats. I'm going to give a really long name here. Lymphocytic eosinophilic gingivitis. And it's okay. A very poorly understood problem. That's possibility number one. Possibility number two is that your cat's teeth may not look bad, but the bad is under the gums, not what you're looking at. It's what you can't see.
Right.
So always, in my estimation, when cats have gingivitis, the first defense is a dental cleaning by someone who knows to get underneath the teeth. In other words, I would never do this, but I would be happy sending your cat home with dirty teeth as long as I knew that the area under the gums was clean, because that's okay. Where the issue is.
Are there periodontal dentists?
Well, there are dentists. There are veterinary dentists, but there are also most veterinarians know how to do a good teeth cleaning. It's done under anesthesia 100% of the time, so that you can get on deep underneath the gums. You can't do it when they're awake. It's not
right. I've done that with my other cat.
Yes. So you could try now if it's this eosinophilic lymphocytic gingivitis, you're going to go to the veterinarian way more than five times, and that can be. To try to cure that, you can go all the way to taking all the teeth out of your cat. I mean, that just happens sometimes, and that's the only thing that cures it, and we don't really understand what that's all about. But my opinion, dental cleaning by someone who is very experienced, and if your veterinarian, this is not a bad thing about your veterinarian. If they say, yeah, we'll do the dental, it takes 20 minutes, and we'll clean the teeth, ask for a referral to a dentist.
Okay.
To a veterinarian. Where do you live?
Torrington.
I'm not familiar out there with who that would be, but there are veterinary dentists all over the state. And if there's questions, that's where you should go.
Thank you, Sharon. Good luck with that.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
I feel so bad for your cat. Yeah, thank you.
And that sounds like an issue that you cannot see based on what you were just saying.
We're talking about a cat that gets sick from this.
Sure.
So I suspect if you could open this cat's mouth, and I say could not because the cat doesn't want you to, but the cat has unique lymph tissue in the back of their mouth. And that lymph tissue tries to absorb the inflammation and any bacterial infection that this problem is involved with. And so that tissue gets very inflamed. So you go to open their mouth and they scream at the top of their lungs because it hurts so much. So, again, under some kind of anesthesia, not sedation. Sedation, they can still feel pain. I'm talking about anesthesia. So anesthesia means no pain. It means without pain. So we knock the cats out very briefly to look inside their mouth, under their tongue, and look to see where this problem might be coming from. If the lymph tissue in the back of the mouth is involved, it most likely is this long name that I just said. And then it's just a real task. And then in that case, I would go see a dentist.
What happens if a cat loses all its teeth?
It's phenomenal. Nothing.
Nothing? I mean, how do they eat?
Okay, it's typically the teeth from the – we don't take the canines or the front teeth out if they're still there. It's basically everything behind the canines. But the canines are not important anyway. Those are the grabbing teeth. And my cats don't have to work too hard to grab their cat food. You know, so those are the ones that secure – the claws and the canines secure the prey and bite the prey. But it's the chewing teeth that seem to be the problem in cats. You can extract all chewing teeth in a cat today. Today is what day of the week? It's Wednesday. By Saturday, that cat will, if you put the hard food down, we'll say, here's canned food, here's mush, here, do whatever you want. But by Saturday, the cat will be eating its dry food all over again.
All right, let's get back to our summer prep kit.
So back to warm weather for a second. Worms.
Worms,
seems to be an issue for both dogs and cats.
Okay.
And I read somewhere that dogs in particular should be treated every 3 months for worms. What does that mean?
Okay. So that directive comes from the Communicable Disease Center, and that has to do with the contagion of parasites from animals to people. Okay? And this can be a socioeconomic issue, or it can be a geographical issue. In the north, things get kind of quiet in the wintertime. You don't worry too much. But that doesn't mean your pet doesn't have parasites that it's carrying over from the fall. In the south, we have socioeconomic issues, and we have geographical issues because it's warm all the time, and these things don't die, nor do fleas, or things just don't die down there. So the issue is that parasites are always available to your pet. They're always out there, and your pet is always, always susceptible to encountering them. The Communicable Disease Center says in order to protect people, you should worm your pets four times a year.
And what do you do?
I like twice a year. What do? You're working with your veterinarian. You are not buying over-the-counter products because they do not get all, no matter what it says on the box, they don't either get all the worms or they are a reduced dose to be allowed to be on the shelf. You know, the FDA controls what's on the shelf. So you do not buy over-the-counter. You go through your veterinarian. You say, I have kids who play with my dogs. Feces can be a contagious issue with parasite eggs. My dog, you know, my kid doesn't eat feces, but he does pet the dog. He may get under his tail where there may be some eggs stuck or whatever. And so I want to worm my pet 4 times a year. And your veterinarian hopefully will work with you. Maybe we'll want your pet in 4 times a year.
What is it? Is it a shot?
It depends on the worms. But if you're using a broad spectrum wormer, it's merely something you put in the food for, depending on which drug.
So they have to test the dog, obviously, to figure out what kind of worms.
If I see Lori Mack's dog, Jack.
Yes, and you know Jack.
He has parasites, and I've met Jack. And he has, let's say I see him 3 years in a row, and he's got parasites 3 years in a row. Hookworms. I'll make that up. Hookworms and whipworms, whatever I want to say. I'll go, you know, Ms. Mack, your dog is being exposed to these parasites in its environment somewhere, other dog's feces, the ground, its paws, whatever. I think we should worm your dog 4 times a year. Here's 4 times of year's worth of worming. You don't have to come in 4 times a year.
So that's one product does all then.
Well, there are, but you still do annual checks to make sure that that's effective. There are a couple of products out there that get the 5 most common worms that we see.
Laura Faith Middleton, Lori Mack, and our guest, Dr. Todd Friedland, our regular contributor and vet on the show. Go ahead, Laura.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Doctor, I have a big yellow lab mix who's about 10 years old. We're not sure. We got him from a rescue. He has allergies, and a little under a year ago, our vet switched his allergy med from prednisone to Apoquel, which I guess has fewer side effects.
Okay.
Right about the time that happened, my job changed, and the dog is now home by himself more than he used to be.
Okay.
And he is now, instead of sleeping all night, regularly waking up and barking. He usually gets up somewhere between 3:30 and 5 in the morning and, of course, wakes all of us up with him. On our vet's advice, we tried melatonin. We've also tried Benadryl. Those didn't work. He gets plenty of exercise. We've tried giving him his meds at different times of day.
Is the Apoquel the issue? Is that your question?
If the Apoquel is the issue, and also any suggestions you might have. One suggestion from one vet was they might be able to put him on Xanax, but it sounded kind of drastic.
Well, Xanax is pretty safe, so if that's where it goes, that's where it goes, and it's a pretty safe drug. The issue is, I guess my first question would be, what does your dog want at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I think he wants attention. If he gets up at 3 in the morning, he'll be standing by the cupboard where we keep the food. If we open the door to go outside, he'll go out and he will go to the bathroom, but I don't think that he's barking because he needs to go outside.
So there's a lot of possibilities here. The only way to tell whether the Apoquel is the issue, and I doubt that it is to stop it for a month or 3 weeks and just see what happens. If the behavior doesn't change, it's not the Apoquel. That's a very easy test to do. The other issue as far as, I'm almost hearing that this dog one morning got up at 3 in the morning and made some noise, and you went and got it a treat, and now it says, oh, this is cool. So I'm almost hearing that as well.
You're well-trained,
but
Laura.
You can break that habit either by crating or by using some drug that will give that dog a night's sleep, let's say for 30 days, and then you come off it and see what happens.
What kind of drug are you talking about?
Xanax might work because the Benadryl, Xanax is really safe. It's related to Valium. I cannot tell you how many millions of people take Xanax all the time. I used it all the time for anxiety issues in dogs. I wouldn't worry about Xanax. Just go on a one-month trial. Do these things. Do trials for a month. But I think number one is take the Apoquel away.
But through the vet so you
absolutely
know what the dosing
you
is.
You can't get Xanax.
For body
weight.
Yeah.
Let's not go to using drugs. That's another topic.
Human drugs
without working with your veterinarian. But I feel very comfortable with Xanax.
Thank you so much, Laura, and good luck to
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. 203-776 WNPR.
So now we're going into allergy season, and I understand that pets – like humans, also develop allergies to certain things and have similar symptoms like itchy eyes, watery eyes.
As a rule.
Yeah.
They may have that, but that's unusual. It's usually in cats and dogs related to skin. So it's usually itching. And one of the things that is so hard to understand, if I knew someone was coming in for a second opinion on allergies, I scheduled a 1 hour appointment because I always said I should have been a pediatric allergist. You know why? There's no emergencies. You get paid well. But the most important is none of your patients ever expect to get better. Allergies typically don't get better. And this is what I spend my time with people. And they change from periods during the year to year to year. It's a very frustrating problem, and you need to work very closely with your veterinarian. There's rarely, but they occur food allergies. There's environmental allergies. I have had two patients that were allergic to human dander. So you got to figure this stuff out so you can best help your
pet. Wow, they're allergic to our dander the same way we can be allergic to theirs?
I only say I had two pets. Now, I have treated thousands and thousands of pets, but those were only two pets that I know of because those people were willing to go ahead with the allergy testing. And the answer to your question, Faith, is why not? But yes, they can be allergic to people. And that's a real issue. Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back with more for you in just about 90 seconds. We'll take a short break. I'm Faith Middleton. Thanks to our producer, Jonathan McNichol. It is the hottest scene in Connecticut, our Food Schmooze Martini Competition. Statewide bartenders shake up innovative martinis, and you vote for the Food Schmooze Martini Champion. Designated driver discount. Great Top Chef noshes. I have a ticket website coming your way. Our DJ sizzle, so bring your dancing shoes. This thing sells out. Thursday, June 25th at 6 p.m., Simsbury's Riverview. Thanks to Power Station Events, $60 tickets to benefit WNPR. You can order now at ctmartini.org. Easy to remember, ctmartini.org. And we have officially applied to the Guinness Book of World Records, no kidding, for the largest martini competition. Our guest, I'm with Lori Mack in the studio, and we are interviewing, as we always do, Todd Friedland, who is our regular contributor many, many years, our vet on the air. We'll go to phones in just a second. Okay, Todd, thanks for sending this note about this Catster magazine. They did an informal survey, I guess, about snacks, cat snacks that were unexpected. And this list is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I don't have the list in front of me, but I talked to Lori earlier today, and I'll let you guys read the list off. But Lori, I had a cat named, who was this cat? I can't remember his name. And this cat was sitting next to me once. I don't feed my pets from the table, or at least I didn't. And one of my Brussels sprouts fell on the floor, and that cat... Remember I talked about how the dogs nail the ice cubes? That cat nailed that Brussels sprout so fast. He just chewed it and swallowed it and looked at me and said, okay, can I have a chair at this table or what?
It's such a riot.
And so I dropped another one on purpose, and he nailed it again. And then for the rest of that cat's life, he and I shared our Brussels sprouts because at that time, Mona didn't eat them.
Here are the unexpected favorite cat snacks from Catster magazine. Broccoli, tomatoes, honeydew melon, licorice, corn on the cob, frozen peas, watermelon, and Cheetos. And now we have to add Brussels sprouts
for the list. Rusty was the cat.
We might hear some more of these in a second. All right. Yeah. In just a minute, I want to hear about, because Lori had, I thought, a great idea for this, which is to talk about which things are unexpectedly toxic. And then Todd also has a warning for us humans with regard to pets and toxicity that would be very valuable, cats or dogs.
Yes.
Okay, Susan, Faith Middleton, Lori Mack, and we're with Todd Friedland, the vet. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share a quick story and then follow up with a question. Two quick stories.
Susan, go ahead. I was going to say to kind of go as quickly as you can, but I hear this is about a serious thing. Go ahead.
Well, I lost my lab of 15 years on Friday.
Oh, sorry.
Also, sorry. Thank you. And anybody who's gone through that is, you know, it's a terrible. It's
a big
so heartbreaking.
Deal.
And also on the same day, a cat of mine unexpectedly passed away. So they're resting peacefully in my yard. And she was a lab who had a huge tumor on her front paw. And she actually belonged to my sister, but the tumor, it must have held a record. Had she been my pet in the beginning, I would have removed it. They made the choice not to because the vet explained it may grow back. This tumor was so massive. It was bigger than a cantaloupe. And around Christmas time, it opened up, and I've been giving her nursing care ever since, and it opened up some more, and actually I could tell she was in real pain. That's why we had to make the decision to put her down. I had a lot of trouble finding real help with this scenario other than, you know, doing the nursing care, which fortunately I was able to do. But it didn't really seem to be painful till the very last day or two, other than really annoying her.
So, Susan, what is your question?
My first question is, in situations like that, because after doing some research, I found, you know, a lot of dog breeds have this similar problem. Is there a special type of doctor you can take these pets to?
Oh, sure. Sure there is. Here's the thing. I went to school about a million years ago, and that's when they said, you know, if there's a lump on a dog, watch it. Okay? I know that that's not okay to do. That is not okay to watch a lump on your dog. First of all, it's important to identify what it is. Is it malignant? Is it benign? Is it benign that will get really big? Is it benign that stays small? You want this information in order to work with your veterinarian and make a decision on what action to take, if any. There are some tumors that grow on the feet of dogs, on the legs of dogs, that get rather large. Some of them are benign. Some of them are malignant. The problem with that area is that there's not a lot of loose skin to sew back together. So you want to get those things when they're first noticed, when they're small, to get them off. Because even the most benign tumor, which I suspect is what you had, can become a real major health issue leading to death. Even though it's benign, you know, everybody says, oh, I have a benign tumor, it's not malignant. But if it's in an area that is either uncomfortable for the dog or it gets big enough where the center of the tumor starts to die, that's what happened to your dog, the tumor grows faster than the body can supply blood vessels to the tumor, to the inside of the tumor. So the tumor tissue that's not getting adequate blood supply dies. It breaks out to the outside, and your nursing care is, you did exactly the right thing. There's nothing you can do unless you want to either remove the tumor or amputate the leg once you get to that point. So you don't ever, ever, ever want to get to that point.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's where this led. Right. The answer to your question specifically is there are veterinary surgeons. Where do you live? Okay, so they're veterinary surgeons all over the place, and these are board-certified surgeons that you get to by referral. So that's right. How you deal with it.
All right, thank you, Susan. I'm so sorry about the loss of your pets, and I hope you're well.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to add one quick thing about the fleas and parasites, not worms, but you know, fleas and mites and things of that nature. I live in the country, and I've read everything I think there is available on fleas, ticks, and lice and mites. I used some diatomaceous earth in my house in areas that the cats or dogs did not have access to, and it had great success because the infestation in this area is, you know, I do that on top of using the spot-on treatments, but I have a couple horses, and in the barn, no matter what I did, just the thing kept coming back, so.
Okay.
I use diatomaceous earth for slugs in my garden.
Okay, thank you, Susan.
It dehydrates, some of the insects.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, it does. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Susan. Good luck to you. All right, Lori, toxicity. I thought this was a great topic.
Well, so common sense would tell you that weed killers and fertilizers would be bad for pets. But what about mulch? I just recently read something about mulch being toxic to pets, which was really surprising to me because my dog's always chewing on something.
Okay, so first is that if you're going to use products on your lawn, then you want to do it like the day before it rains. And you don't want your pet on the yard until it then dries. And that will dilute out these toxins that are there. Some animals are more sensitive than others to them, but animals go out and play, and then they come home, they lick themselves, and some of them are very sensitive, and some of these chemicals are really toxic. If you're using one of these services that comes in and sprays 40 chemicals at a time, I would tell anybody that does that they're nuts. Sorry for being so blunt, but I would say they're nuts for themselves and for their pets. The issue is that those companies, they have proprietary secrets, and if an animal comes in sick, they will swear that it's not them, but it is. But we don't have any idea what to do with these combinations of chemicals. I mean, we know what to do with chemical mm-hmm. A. We might know what to do with chemical B, but not 30 of them all mixed together.
Yeah, this is true for humans, too.
Absolutely.
I've talked to blood doctors at Yale, and they say they have a very hard time because companies will not give up.
They will not divulge what they put on the lawn.
In cosmetics or nail polish, whatever it might be.
That's why the Food Schmooze show we did the other day was so cool, because that vintner uses only grapes in his wine, remember?
Yes.
And nothing else.
That's right.
And
we're
it tasted that way.
That.
Okay, mulch. I've had dogs that eat mulch. I think mulch will cause a gastric upset, no question about it. But there's a mulch out there that I used to use called cocoa shells. They're the shells of cocoa beans. They're all over. They come in 40-pound bags. They're all over the place. Those can be toxic because they contain the same chemicals that chocolate does, obviously. So cocoa mulch, if you have pets, don't use. Other mulch, you just need to either buy the big nuggets or train your dog not to eat mulch or let your dog throw up when it eats mulch like my dog did.
Now, the fact that it's cocoa, does that sort of lead to them being attracted to it anyway because of the smell?
No, it smells really good, though. Your whole yard smells like chocolate and you just want to lay in the middle of the lawn and
smell nice.
But I'm not sure. You know, I don't know the answer to that.
But don't do it if you have pets.
But just don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this idea of what's the leading cause of toxicity in pets, cats, and dogs?
If we put this out for a survey, nobody would get it. It's, you know, we all talk about chocolate and we talk about grapes and raisins. It's human medicine, human medication, both intentional and accidental. And I cannot tell you how many times I would have to take care of a dog or a cat where someone said, I thought the dog or cat had the same problem I had, so I gave it one of my pills for that problem, and this is the way you think of it.
And was it the dosing or the...
it's dosing. Or the drug itself is, you know, cats are very, very... the way they metabolize things is unique, so that you can take what would otherwise be a very safe drug, aspirin, kill a cat, very easily with aspirin.
Really?
Yes.
The amount, because of the amount?
They don't metabolize it the same way we do. So you could give a cat, I am not prescribing aspirin for any cat. I need to make that perfectly clear right now. It's a very special case that you would. But you would give a cat maybe, depending on the size of the cat, anywhere from half of an 81, maybe even a quarter of an 81 milligram twice a week. That's it, because it takes them days to metabolize aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful.
So the cats and dogs get into the pills, or humans think, why should I pay? Do companies, the pharmaceutical companies that serve the animal population and are, in fact, using the same drugs that humans have, do they charge more for those than what humans pay? Is that what would prompt somebody?
I could go on all day about that. The answer to your question is maybe, but it's yes. If it's a proprietary name drug, I'll name one. There's an antibiotic called amoxicillin. It's as cheap as dirt. But there actually is a law in Connecticut that says veterinarians are compelled to use animal-labeled amoxicillin because there is an animal-labeled amoxicillin. You can use a generic or an alternative if there's nothing animal-labeled. But amoxicillin for animals, if you use that proprietary name, is very expensive. Way more expensive than the generic that you and I would take.
Do you think that's what leads people to...
Well, money is always an issue. I don't really know. It's more, getting back to why, it's more the dose than it is anything else. The average drug is made for a 75-kilogram person. In English, that means 150 pounds.
Is it against the law for a vet to coach a pet owner, whatever the politically correct term for that is?
A client.
Yes, a client, on how to use human medicine in an animal if it's called for?
Can I just tell the story? There was a legislator in Connecticut whose dog died of kidney failure as a complication of diabetes. He discovered that the insulin was human labeled. There is no animal label. Well, there was no animal labeled at that time. And he sued the world, saying, you killed my 18-year-old dog with diabetes with a human drug. the response by the legislature was that veterinarians must use an animal-labeled drug if it exists, and if it doesn't exist for that purpose that they need, then they can use a human drug. But very few veterinarians comply with that it's so expensive for the client to use some of these drugs.
Oh, really?
It's ridiculous.
Huh. So they don't?
Well, some don't and some do.
Mm-hmm.
I would say most veterinarians don't even know about this law. I just happen to be in the middle of all the laws of veterinary medicine in Connecticut for 15 years, and that's during that tenure that it happened.
Tom, welcome to the show. We're with our vet, Dr. Todd Friedland. Tom, are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. I guess we've lost him. 203-776-WNPR. I can hear him somewhere in the background.
Yeah,
there. He's probably kicking himself.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, hi. Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
One thing with Susan, I'm sorry for her. I had the exact same thing happen to my dog several years back. But the question was about the Xanax. My dog has been on a Clomicom, I believe is the pronunciation.
Yep.
And he seems to be actually having a reaction to it. He seems to just itch like crazy. So I'm curious, can I ask my vet for a actual Xanax prescription for my dog, or is that just what they're calling it?
Clomicom is a specific, well, it's an anti-anxiety medicine used long-term. Xanax is used short-term. So we're talking apples and oranges here.
Okay.
All right, but you should have either a discussion with your veterinarian or a veterinarian who is more familiar with pharmaceuticals. And some veterinarians are and some aren't, and you just have to ask questions on that one. But and then you have to be very, very careful if indeed that drug is the problem, because most itching in dogs is either fleas or allergies. It's 99% of the time it's either fleas or allergies, so I question it. But in transitioning one drug to another could take you 2 to 3 months, just so you know that.
We had decided to wean them off.
Well, you shouldn't decide. Yeah.
No, I said we.
Yes, okay.
And to see what would happen, because, I mean, he would just scratch nonstop.
Oh,
and sure enough, he you know, now he scratches like a normal dog every now and then. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got
to admit. So you need to search for the right drug.
Yeah,
that's it.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
May I just say, the issues with these behavior drugs is that anybody can have any reaction to any of them.
Yes, like humans.
Like
okay.
Humans.
So tick season, I just want to hit on this. We thought because it was such a bad winter and it was so cold at times that ticks would be affected and we'd have a smaller number of them. Did just the reverse happen?
Did I not call you and tell you this winter was Florida for ticks? the thoughts are that the heavy snow blanket actually protects the ticks and the eggs from acute temperature changes. And so if there's no snow and it gets cold and warm,
insulator blanket.
Yes, that's exactly right. So I would expect that this is going to be a paramount tick year, but so is every year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So out come the best drugs.
Out come the products. And now there are many that have jumped on the bandwagon. And my only advice is I have two things to say. One is do not buy over-the-counter. And two is discuss with your veterinarian what he's finding is working best in that area. Just discuss it with your veterinarian and say, what are you having the best luck with? That's what I want to start with.
Over-the-counter is not strong enough, doesn't work, can't tell if...
It's a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to be short.
No, we have 30 seconds,
yes,
actually.
Okay. They don't spread, many of them don't spread on your dog as well as the real product, so you're not really using the same product.
All right. Thank you, Lori Mack, for joining me on the show. And Todd Friedland, as always, it's just great having you here.
Thank you.
Our vet from Mansfield, Connecticut, longtime contributor. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find all the books, people, great recipes, everything you want at foodschmooze.org in New Haven. With Lori Mack, I'm Faith Middleton. Yeah.